Breakfast with Spanky, 7:30 to 9:30 on RDU 98.5 FM.
Now, with me on the phone right now is a Kiwi adventurer searching for some controversial artifacts. Good morning to Mike Alsop. Are you there, Mike?
Hi, good morning. How are you going?
Good, thank you. And yourself?
Yeah, very good. Excellent. Good, thanks.
Now, listen, Mike, you're an adventurer. Is this a bit of a hobby for you, or is this something that you've been doing a long time? Because I know that you're a pilot as well.
Yeah, I'm a pilot. It's my full-time job, but I've got a bit of a part-time adventure streak in me. So a couple of years ago, I spent quite a bit of time climbing a lot of mountains around the world, and in 2007, I was lucky enough to climb up Mount Everest to get to the top of that. And sort of in my journeys, I sort of became friends with a group of monks and a lama in a monastery in Nepal, and this is where sort of this whole thing sort of started from.
Right, okay. So tell us a little bit about the story. So you've obviously met these monks in 2007, but they had something removed from their village in 1999, is that right? Or 1990?
Yeah, in the late 90s, I think. So basically what happens is there's a lama who's sort of the head of all the monks. He blesses all the climbers that go into the mountains.
Right.
And in his little monastery or gompa, he had a very, very old skull and a very whole old hand, and it was said to be a Yeti skull and a hand. But wow. Whether you believe in the Yeti or not, you know, that's another story.
So just to clarify, the Yeti and the abominable snowman, the same thing?
Same thing. So, and all these people fully believed in it, and what they'd do is they'd go and show tourists the skull and his hand and would get $1 or $2 donation. Anyway, somebody took it in 1990, in the 90s, and that basically took their little income away from this, you know, this little this monastery.
Right.
So I had an idea, and there's quite a very mysterious story around it. It's quite a cool story about how it disappeared and all, you know, things to do with it. So I had an idea to ask Weta Workshops if they'd make me some replicas, and then I'd take the replicas back up to the monastery and display them in the monastery, and they could show them to trekkers and tourists again and get their little income back.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I've started a website called returnthehand.com, and I'm hoping that it would just, by word of mouth, I might find the person that's actually taken them, and hopefully they want to give them back, and I'll go anywhere in the world and pick them up for them for free and buy them a beer for their troubles.
So you'll just swap them back again, take the replicas back again and carry on, but at least you'll have peace of mind knowing that those are the actual bones.
Well, yes, yeah, hopefully, and if these people want the replicas who have got the hand, I'm sure I could organise something there for them, but I'd just like to get the real, there's a lot of outrage when they got stolen, because, you know, the Sherpas and the monks are very trusting people, and somebody to take these was, you know, pretty bad.
Yeah, bring in the West. Now, there is a bit of there's even more story to this, isn't there? A Texan oil magnate, Tom Slick, I believe. One of his employees went over there in the 50s, wasn't it? So do we even
know whether...
Because apparently he took the skull and the hand. So the ones that they've had between the 50s and the 90s, could they have been replicas themselves?
No. What happened is in the late 50s, he found these in the monastery, and there was hardly any people went up that valley in the 50s. He found these. And he tried to take a sample, and they said no. So he went back a couple of years later, and he had a lot of connections at Oxford University, or so the story goes, in England. And he took a human finger, and what he did is he cut the finger off the skeletal hand, and lockwired a human finger onto it, and then gave that little bone to a actor called Jimmy Stewart.
Yep.
And Jimmy Stewart and his wife smuggled it back to England. And it got tested. And out of the 20 experts that tested it, 10 said it was unknown, probably a Yeti, and the other 10 said it's human. And the Yeti's like that. If you want to believe in it, you can put all the evidence towards it, and if you don't want to believe in it, all the evidence can go one way.
Yeah. So the Nepalese believe fully, or are they not sold?
Most Sherpas do. Privately, most Sherpas believe in it. It's really deep in their folklore. But later on in the 90s, a program called Unsolved Mystery started, so this is where all the exposure came from, started looking at it, and they found a tiny little bit of bone left in Oxford University. And they DNA tested it, because they didn't have DNA testing in the 50s, and it came back as unknown. They didn't know. They said it was humanoid. It wasn't human, but it had human traces in it, and it wasn't ape. They just didn't know what it was.
God, this is fascinating. So you must be getting pretty excited. Do you leave soon for your trip?
Well, I'm taking 15 Air New Zealand people up to Everest Base Camp next year, and on the way we're going to take these replicas back to the monks. We're going to make a big plaque up, and it's going to tell them this replicas, a little bit of the story, and say how they donated from Weta Workshops in New Zealand, and then put the word out. And the main thing is just to encourage people to go back up to this little tiny monastery, because it's about a half an hour walk off the track to get to it, and just to get the monks their little income back, basically.
Mm. So, so you're flying over with your team. Is that just a bunch of staff that you've got together going, hey, why not go to base camp?
Yeah, yeah. So I've got you know, 15 people from all over the business in New Zealand, and we're going up to the team, and I'm going to guide them through to base camp, and we'll just climb a little mountain next to Everest called Kalibatar, and you can trek up it.
Is that the starter mountain, is it?
The base camp's the start of Everest, yeah.
Mm. For beginners kind of thing, though. Test your feet.
Yeah, you have to train, and it's quite a lot. It's 17,500 feet to base camp, and 18,500 on this mountain. So, no, it takes us quite a while. It's quite a long journey, so we're really looking forward to it.
So have you had any, with your website, have you had any interest or any sort of leads yet?
Not yet, but we just had some English papers hopefully getting hold of it yesterday. They were emailing me and asking me questions about it. So it won't be in New Zealand and it won't be in Australia because of our border security laws.
Mm.
So hopefully it will be if it's in England or America. So that's what I'm sort of working towards now. So if any of your listeners can pass my website on, it's www.returnthehand.com.
Returnthehand.com. That sounds like the start of a movie as well. So what's next for you? If you do manage to track this down, are you going to try and get the Holy Grail, the Spear of Destiny, or anything like that?
No, nothing like that. This is just to help the monks out. This is just, just to help the monks out. A little project on the side, do something nice for them, because they've done something nice to a lot of people.
You're a good man, Mike.
Thank you very much.
I wish you well on your travels as well.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. See you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Here we go. Mike Allsop. What a man. What a man amongst men. A travelling man.
This has been a Breakfast with Spanky podcast, thanks to RDU 98.5 FM. To find out more, go to rdu.org.nz.